Now Alka-Seltzer brings you the noted commentator, author, and reporter, Morgan Beatty.
While the nation's coal miners were going back to work today in increasing numbers, a new wave of disputes developed in Washington about the new contract between John L. Lewis and the coal operators. B.C. Forbes, the business publisher, told the Congressional Economic Committee that the coal miners and the operators had entered into a conspiracy to thumb their noses at the new Taft-Hartley labor law. As we've noted before, the new contract does register an agreement partly outside of the new law, or at least preliminary to it, and both sides have shown that they prefer to settle their troubles without benefit of legislative clergy. The agreement provides for a binding arbitration ahead of the National Labor Relations Board. This and other provisions were apparently under attack by Mr. Forbes in the belief that the prestige of the law had been damaged. Senator Robert Taft of Ohio, the key Republican in Washington, that is, stepped up immediately to dispute Mr. Forbes and argue his point that the Taft-Hartley law was designed to produce voluntary settlements of industrial arguments. And that's what happened in this case, voluntary settlement. As far as the employer is concerned, said Mr. Taft, it's up to him to protect himself. Employers are free to make any contract they wish to make. I don't think this mine contract, Mr. Taft concluded, is in any way a violation of the law. Later, however, he told reporters that a minor violation might be involved in the coal operators' promise to collect for the union's assessments and initiation fees in addition to union dues. Senator Flanders, the Republican freshman from Vermont, had still another slant on economic masterminding. He agreed the coal operators had a difficult choice to make, a shutdown versus Mr. Lewis's terms. The operators say they signed up, you know, with the miners to avoid inflated, confused prices, not to create them. But there's a danger, Senator Flanders thinks, much greater than inflation. If big labor, he said, and big business combine against the interests of the people, then we must develop big government to deal with inflation. But, he said, big government is a move toward totalitarian government, and labor and management are bringing us a step closer to totalitarian government. That is something Senator Flanders views with worse than alarm. The question now is, will the new coal contract start a new spiral of wage and price rises and dangerous inflation? Later on this News of the World program, Bjorn Bjornsson will report what's being done about that issue. Now, more top drawer news. The President's weekly news conference. Mr. Truman was jovial, smiling from start to finish. He thought the coal agreement was up to them, as he put it, meaning Mr. Lewis and the operators. He had no plans for any trips this fall. He'll call a special session of Congress if one is necessary to carry out the Marshall Plan of aid for Europe. But he doesn't seem to think one will be necessary as far as he can tell now. The news meeting came within an ace of bogging down into a Missouri mule affair. It's this way. Former Congressman Roger Slaughter, the one Mr. Truman helped to beat last year, charged in Tulsa, Oklahoma today that a scandal threatens the presidency. Not that Mr. Truman is involved personally, but he is surrounded, so Mr. Slaughter thinks, with false friends and bad influences. Then Mr. Slaughter attacked the Kansas City Pendergast machine, the group that helped anyway to beat him for the president. President Truman replied to a reporter's question today that, considering the source of the Slaughter charges, he was not worried. Later, Mr. Slaughter came back with a rebuttal that if Mr. Truman was not worried, he's in a different state of mind than the Democratic candidates who'll be running in 1948. Neither Mr. Truman nor Mr. Slaughter got at the heart of this dispute, namely, the president is against Tom Slaughter now and for always because, as a member of the powerful House Rules Committee, he voted time after time with Republicans against his own party. That's not Hoyle, as Rules Committee Hoyle goes. And there was an interlude, too, about the Missouri Valley Authority today. It wound up with Mr. Truman saying that he's for the MVA and flood control, too. The atomic energy dispute spread out here and there today. Senator Hickenlooper repeated, however, and accented his statement of yesterday that spies have not succeeded in getting any atomic secrets of substance. Now, for the first of our direct reports, here's John McVane in New York.
The United States and Russia today took up in the United Nations an argument about Austria that's embittered big four meetings all over Europe. Austria's on the borderland between Eastern and Western Europe. Russia has delayed settling terms of a peace treaty for fear that an independent, non-communist Austria might prove a bridgehead for American penetration of Russia's sphere of influence. Today, the Security Council received Austria's request to become a member of the United Nations. Mr. Gromyko of Russia objected against even putting the application on the Council agenda. With Russia and Australia abstaining, the other nine countries voted to discuss Austria's request. Gromyko contended the Austrian peace treaty hasn't been signed or even drawn up, so the UN couldn't discuss Austria's qualifications. Herschel Johnson of the United States quickly reminded Gromyko that the Moscow Big Three Conference of 1944 announced Austria would not be considered an enemy state, but a victim of aggression. The American asserted the Austrian peace treaty had been retarded for reasons well known to the world, meaning Russia's unwillingness to pull out her troops. Finally, without vote, Austria's application, with those of seven other countries, went to the membership committee. But Mr. Gromyko's words today were just one phase of Russia's alarm about Austria. In Austria itself, the Russian High Commissioner charged the United States has agreed to spend $100 million on Austria to control and supervise the country's entire economic life. And the Russian indicated the Soviets are not pleased. Now, this is John McVane in New York.
Economics are a-popping all over Europe. Henry Cassidy's at the NBC microphone in Paris, Merrill Muller in London. Suppose we ask them to talk over the forthcoming European conference. First, Henry Cassidy in Paris.
The lineup for Saturday's conference on the Marshall Plan is now just about complete, with 14 European countries accepting the Anglo-French invitation and seven refusing. The only one still to be heard from is Finland. But Russia apparently has put heavy pressure on her satellites to keep them out of the conference. Czechoslovakia, which accepted the invitation 3 days ago, changed her mind tonight and announced she would not be present. Dispatches from Prague say the new decision was reached under orders from Moscow. The curious angle to this is that Russia objects to the conference on the grounds that it might interfere with the independence of small countries, but those small countries of Eastern Europe, which have already admitted their interest in a European recovery plan with American aid, are showing very little independence in bowing to Russia's ban against the conference. But tell us, Merrill Muller in London, what does the British delegation have in mind?
Foreign Secretary Ernest Bevin is leaving here for Paris tomorrow, Henry, with a large staff of economic experts from every section of the British government. Bevin has four principles in mind for the conference before he turns the British delegation over to his special deputy, Sir Oliver Frank. The most important of these principles is speed. Bevin will ask that the conference finish drafting a program and submit it to Secretary Marshall by August 31st. Thereafter, Bevin's ideas are that the conference should not wander into political discussions, that it should keep its hands off all bilateral trading agreements, and should keep the Russians fully informed of all progress, as well as leaving the door open for later cooperation. But tell us, Henry Cassidy, how do the Americans fit into the picture?
By now, the French have a clear idea of what Secretary Marshall meant by his speech of June 5th. Will Clayton, Undersecretary of State, has been here for the last 3 days. His visit has been quiet, almost casual, to avoid any appearance of American interference in domestic affairs over here, but he has had several long talks with French leaders. They are now convinced on several points: that the United States wants to approach the problem as a whole, that this is the last chance to enlist American help, but that the United States is prepared to go ahead with the important group of Western nations which will meet here. But Merrill Muller, have you heard anything new on what the Russians may do in Eastern Europe?
Judging by diplomatic and news reports received in London tonight, Henry, the Russians are already busy attempting competitive economic trading with Western Europe. A new Russo-Bulgarian trading agreement totaling $88 million for next year is announced tonight. And the British government learned today that its negotiators now in Moscow are running into sudden difficulties. The Russians apparently can only deliver 20% of the grain and timber quotas, which drew the British to Moscow for a new trade treaty. At the same time, Britain received a barter suggestion from the Soviet-controlled sections of the Romanian oil industry. These companies need new refining equipment, and they asked the British for it in return for 70,000 tons of oil. But only the Soviet is allowed to export Romanian oil to the discrimination of Western interests. And of course, Britain expects a vicious propaganda campaign from the communists because of Bevin's leadership in organizing the Paris conference. That's already started, and that's the economic survey tonight. Speaking for Henry Cassidy in Paris and myself, this is Merrill Muller in London, returning you to Morgan Beatty in Washington.
And now back to our own economics and the question of our own inflation. Here's Bjorn Bjornsson.
This is the season of mid-year forecasts, and right now the nation's economic outlook and its crop prospects are in the foreground. President Truman's Council of Economic Advisers today gave him a report which contained an appraisal of the possible effects of the new wage increase granted coal miners. Dr. Edwin G. Norse, chairman of the council, said the report gives very serious consideration to the problem whether the new coal contract will snowball into general price increases. It covers the first half of this year, continuing on from the first annual report submitted last December. That was when the possibility of a dip in 1947 was mentioned, but generally favorable conditions were predicted for some years ahead. The report also discusses what might happen and what the cumulative effect of recent wage and price increases will be. The Council's report will be made public sometime before Congress adjourns. Other government economists are concerned about the inflationary effects of the wage boost for miners. They see an inevitable rise in steel prices, though not as much as the 8.5% predicted by some steel company officials. They have hopes that automobile prices won't rise, though other steel products may go up. The Department of Agriculture today predicted a normal corn crop of 2.6 billion bushels. It also forecast a record 1.5 billion bushel wheat crop, but only an average volume of feed grains. For price-conscious consumers, there's at least a negative hope that food costs won't go any higher. This is Bjorn Bjornsson, and that's what happened in Washington today.
Morgan Beatty will return with some more late news. Do you eat your day's biggest meal in the evening? If so, you probably know that sometimes that heavy meal makes you feel overstuffed and uncomfortable even after you've gone to bed. So try this. About an hour before bedtime, drink a glass of sparkling, refreshing Alka-Seltzer. Yes, let Alka-Seltzer help settle that acid-upset stuffy feeling in the stomach and help you get the rest and sleep you need to be efficient and do good work the next day. Keep an extra 30 or 60 cent size package of Alka-Seltzer handy so you'll have it when you want it. Remember, you can get Alka-Seltzer at any drugstore.
From coast to coast, this program will observe an 8-second pause while you make a note to get one-a-day brand multiple vitamins from your drugstore. Ready? Eight seconds, eight vitamins in one capsule. Vitamins every normal person needs. That's what you're sure of when you supplement your meals with one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsule every day. It's your vitamin health insurance because it helps you look well and keep well. When you buy vitamins, insist on one-a-day brand.
Now here again is Morgan Beatty.
And here are signs of our times. Washington, President Truman told his news conference today that he saw no reason to change his mind about the tax cut. He still says it's the wrong kind of legislation at the wrong time. He will veto the repeat tax bill when it reaches his desk. Senator Barkley says the Democrats generally will stand behind their chief. The Republican high command retorts late today that the president has committed an impropriety in announcing his tax cut position in advance of the bill's passage. Nashville, Tennessee. Speaking of flying saucers, Tennessee Safety Commissioner Lynn Bomar announced today that the man who disappeared in Nickajack Cave 10 days ago has been found in New York, and the disappearance was a hoax from beginning to end. For a week, John T. Hearn, former soldier and part owner of unprofitable Nickajack Cave, has had guardsmen, highway patrolmen, Boy Scouts, the whole neighborhood dragging underground lakes for his body. His wife's been keeping a sleepless vigil. Today, ex-soldier Hearn is sorry for all the trouble he's caused. The whole thing got out of hand. And now, NBC and our sponsors have kindly arranged to give me a vacation this summer by weekends, the way I asked for it. For 10 weeks, I'll be away on Fridays, visiting, maybe, and fishing. So see you Monday. And that's, this is RQ, and that's the news of the world. This is Morgan Beatty speaking for Alka-Seltzer, saying goodbye from Washington.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.